size and shape as the Santiago. It's another flotilla ship, Norquinco. Why have you waited until now to tell me, Skye? Because until now, I haven't had the means to do anything about it. Now, though, I do have the means. I want to go there, Norquinco. Take a small expedition to her. But it has to be conducted in absolute secrecy. The strategic value of that ship is beyond imagining. There'll be supplies on her, components, machines, drugs, everything we've had to make do without for decades. More than that, though, she'll have antimatter on her, and she'll probably have a functioning propulsion system. That's why I want Gomez along. But I'll need you as well. I don't expect to find anyone alive on her, but we'll have to get into her, warm her systems, and bypass her security. Norquinco looked at him wonderingly.
I can do that, Skye.
Good. I knew you wouldn't let me down. He told Norquinco that they would leave for the ghost ship as soon as he could arrange to take a shuttle without anyone suspecting his real intention, a problem that in itself would require some careful planning. They would be gone for several days, too, and no one must notice that, either. But the risk he thought would be worth it. That ship was sitting behind them like a lure, inviting them to plunder the riches that lay aboard her. Only Skye even knew for sure that the ghost ship existed. You know, Clown murmured with him again, it would be a crime to ignore it.
When Skye had left me, the episode as usual had occupied only an instant of actual time, I reached into my pocket for the gun, wondering as I did about the phallic significance of that gesture. Then I shrugged and did the only thing which seemed reasonable, which was to walk towards the light and the entrance which fed back into the particular neighborhood of the canopy where I had been deposited. I entered the plaza-like interior, trying to put a cocky swagger into my stride, as if by feedback it might make me feel more confident. The place was just as bustling as Esher Heights, even though it was now well beyond midnight. But the architecture was like nothing I had seen. It had been hinted at in the place where Waverley worked me over, and the geometries which passed for domestic in Zebra's rooms. But here, that curvilinear juxtaposition of mismatched topologies, stomach-like tubes and doughy walls and ceilings, had been pushed to a mind-wrenching extreme. I wandered around for an hour, studying the faces and occasionally sitting down near a koi pond. They were ubiquitous, just letting recent events jostle around in my mind. I kept hoping that one of the patterns would strike me as being somehow more truthful than the rest, and that I'd then know what was happening, and what my own part in it all was. But the patterns were half-hearted and incomplete, shards missing and troubling asymmetries spoiling their veracity. Maybe a more intelligent man than I might have seen something, but I was too tired to search for any artfully concealed subtleties. All I knew was the surface events. I'd been sent here to kill a man, and despite all the odds, I had found myself standing only a few meters from him, before I was even properly searching for him. I ought to have felt elated, even though I had failed to put the moment to proper use. But what I felt instead was a queasy sense of wrongness, as if I had drawn four aces in the first hand of a poker game. The kind of luck which felt like the prelude to ill fortune. I reached into my pocket, feeling the wad of money I still had. There was less than I'd begun the night with. The clothes and the consultation with the mixmaster hadn't come cheap, but I wasn't out of cash just yet. I retraced my steps back towards the ledge where Chantrell had left me, debating what to do next, knowing only that I wanted to speak to Zebra again. As I prepared to